Once Upon Another Time, written by Silenus and read by Wilfriede 0815. Fandom, The Locked Tomb. Relationship, Mercimore I/Christabel Oct. Rating, explicit. No archive warnings apply. Additional tags: non-linear narrative, pre-canon, light dom sub, mirror sex, ye old fantasy flash magic strap-on. The day that it happens, Mercimorn breaks her favorite coffee mug. It's, frankly, an absurd detail to focus on, but it sticks inside her mind for centuries, nevertheless. Her world shatters apart, and her favorite sunflower yellow mug cracks and splinters into clay shards. The color yellow still makes her queasy, millennia later. When John resurrects Christabel, everyone smiles. Mercy frowns over at her, tall and strong and blinking at them in confusion, listening intently as John mutters in her ear. Christabel, your name is Christabel. He names them all, or reminds them of who they were. Mercy is never altogether sure, even millennia later. Of the ones that Mercy has been present for, apart from her own, it's always a bit maddening. Augustine raged, terrified, knocking into things and destroying his own clothes, until John and Valency got him around the arms, John muttering soothing nonsense into his ear until he calmed down. Nigella had broken a table. Apparently, Mercy broke a window and her own nose, though she has no memory of this, only Gideon and John's accounts to go on. It's jarring, the way Christabel sits up calmly and looks at all of them, one by one, taking them in as though she is resurrected every few months and is an old hat. She pauses on Mercy, blinking slowly like a cat as she looks Mercy up and down, taking a long time. Oh, she breathes out after a long, uncomfortable moment. It's you. Her voice is like a cloud, soft and boneless. She sounds like she's testing the words out, but isn't sure whether or not she wants to commit to them, still trying to make sense of her thoughts. Hello, she says, and smiles fondly. In all of the years that come after, Christabel never tells Mercy what she meant by, it's you, no matter how many times she asks.
I beg your pardon?
Mercy asks, her own voice coming out in an embarrassing croak.
This is Mercimorn, John says, quickly cutting in. And Gideon, Augustine, Nigella, Cassiopeia, Pyrrha, Alfred, Valency, and Cyrus.
He points to each one, standing in a small circle together near the wall. Christabel smiles and pushes herself off the table on slightly unsteady legs.
And now we're all together, she says, rather cryptically.
Even John, perhaps especially John, looks slightly uneasy.
Yes, he says, teacher mask firmly in place. Yes, now we are.
From somewhere off behind them, Alecto snorts ruefully. Christabel has a knife in her hands. Not unusual. She has many weapons on her. A nun who is ready for anything. To offer a hug or a quick death. It depends on the situation. But the knife is poised against her own throat, this time, and there is a wild, terrible look in her eyes. All the blood inside Mercy's body drops. The air between them feels thick and dreadful, and Mercy's more frightened than she's felt since the moment that she was resurrected.
Chris, she says, soft, quiet, not qualities generally associated with her, unless it comes to this woman. What are you doing?
A holy act,
Christabel says, her voice is steady, sure.
An act of love.
No, Mercy says, firm, terrified. Be selfish and cruel. I need you to.
My love, Christabel says, cutting her off. We will be wonderful together, I promise.
The knife slides into place, and the noise that comes out of Mercy is unspeakable, awful. It haunts her dreams for millennia after. The edge of the desk is cutting sharply into Mercy's hip, but she can't find it in herself to complain. Christabel's got three fingers inside of her, pumping furiously as she rubs at Mercy's clit with her other hand. Her breath is hot on the back of Mercy's neck,
and every inch of her body feels like it's on fire, lit up, awake in a wake she hasn't felt in months. "That's it," Christabel is whispering. "You're doing so well, Mercy." She shudders embarrassingly against the desk, and Christabel's throaty laugh reverberates against her skin. "Fuck off," Mercy manages to mutter half a second later.
"Nah,"
Christabel says, curling her fingers. Mercy gasps and clenches the edge of the desk with her fists, clawing for anything to hold on to.
"I like this better,"
Christabel whispers, and bites down on Mercy's shoulder as she presses hard against her clit. When she comes, Mercy feels it in her whole body, dropping her head down onto the desk as she pants. She feels Christabel gently pull out of her and moan into her sweat-slicked skin. Christabel's hands come up and slip around her stomach, lifting her slightly. When Mercy gathers the energy to look back up and twist her neck around, it's to Christabel watching her with an expression that Mercy has never seen before, but some selfish parts of her wants to see again and again. Christabel smiles softly down as she twists Mercy's body back around to face her, and the look on her face is all awe, yet without surprise. Mercy stares back at her, dazed.
"You are exactly as amazing and beautiful as I should have expected, but didn't," she thinks, absently.
Christabel laughs, and it's a sound that is so full of joy it almost hurts Mercy's ears. It's something that, dangerously, Mercy could definitely get used to hearing with more regularity.
"Still want me to fuck off?"
Christabel asks, all teasing as she nuzzles her face down into Mercy's shoulder.
"Yes," Mercy Morn says, primly. "I don't believe you."
Christabel bites at her skin again, and Mercy hisses, jerking in her arms.
"That sounds like a you problem," she says,
moves to slip out of Christabel's grasp, sweaty and naked, to find her clothes. Christabel leans against the desk and watches her, all amusement and easy affection. Mercy avoids her eye and yanks on her skirt with shaking hands.
"This isn't going to happen again," she says, for at least the fourth time.
"Sure," Christabel says, easy. She doesn't believe that any more than Mercy does, but she isn't pushing. Not yet. Mercy flees down to her lab and doesn't look back once.
John's ideas are, well, frankly, absurd. Everything is chaotic, and this power that's thrumming through Mercy's veins is as intoxicating as it is debilitating.
Only some of them have it. John is vague about why, seems as confused as they are, and claims he tried to give some of his power to them all. Mercy's not quite sure if she should believe him. Christabel does. Alfred does. Gideon does. Cassiopeia doesn't, Mercy can tell. She's not entirely sure why she just knows what Cassiopeia looks like when she isn't sure about something, is still working a problem out, gathering data. But she knows it all the same. Nigella is frowning at Cassiopeia too, and she catches Mercy's eye. There's a long, drawn-out moment of eye contact that Mercy hates, and then Nigella shrugs and grins at her. Then Christabel grabs her hand, eyes wild and excited as she pulls Mercy's focus away.
"Look at this world we're making,"
she exclaims, breathless with wonder. "Hmm." Mercy nods, uncomfortable and distracted, and she tucks her hand away, and Christabel frowns.
"So, houses, you say?"
She focuses on John instead. "It's easier, safer.
How very private school."
She doesn't know where that thought came from, and John frowns at her like she's a puzzle.
"I know, right?" John says, grinning to cover. "I'll let you pick out your own color scheme."
"Gold and pussy pink for us,"
Valency calls out, jumping on top of Cyrus's back. Mercy glares at her, annoyed to find a very similar expression splitting onto Augustine's face. Christabel loops their arms together as they walk down Canaan House. Unprompted and uninvited. Easy, like she's done it 100 times before, instead of only born again merely 3 days ago. Mercy looks down at their arms. It feels familiar, though she knows it's not.
"I don't enjoy being touched," she says curtly.
"Except by me," Christabel says, grinning that smooth, relaxed grin that seems permanently etched onto her face.
No, Mercy says, and moves to yank her arm away again. By anyone.
Okay, Christabel says, pleasantly. Everything seems easy to her.
Fine. Absolutely great. Totally unbothered.
Mercy wants to strangle her. She wants to see her angry.
Eighth, she says. And finally, Christabel looks confused. Will be the eighth house. Grey blues.
Why eight? Christabel asks. No judgment, just curious.
There are only five pairs of us.
I like even numbers, Mercy admits. The number itself is symmetrical to look at.
She shrugs, feeling awkward. Christabel only smiles fondly back at her.
Okay, she says. Eighth it is.
The day that Christabel convinces Alfred... No, not quite a day, so much as days, really. They've been working on theorems for months, years, John infusing them with a sort of immortality that they all know won't last. Everyone tucked up away together in Canaan House, building a new world, a new science, an empire. It won't last, unless...
Mercy puts the book that's in her hands down onto the table very carefully and tries to breathe.
No, that cannot be the solution. John couldn't have possibly meant... Alecto isn't...
She won't do that to Christabel. Not even for true immortality. Not for anything.
Not yet.
When she looks back, thousands of years later, she can't actually remember who came up with cavalierhood. The ones of them with bits of John's power tire easily the longer they use it. The rest of them have to do something. Valency and Pura already enjoy sparring to relieve boredom. It just sort of happens organically. They pair off without thinking much about it, and then it's the way of things. Necromancers, as John dubs them, and cavaliers. It works. Until it doesn't. Until Nigella is gasping on the floor, Cassiopeia screaming in rage for help, Alecto looking on detached yet furious, John scrambling to hold Nigella together, Christabel clinging to Mercy, Mercy watching Cassiopeia with horrified eyes, Pyrrha and Valency holding her back, upright. Everyone suspended in that horrible moment for what feels like years.
This is not sustainable, Cassiopeia whispers, days later, as the two of them stand above Nigella's bed, watching her sleep her way back into recovery.
No, Mercy whispers back, her hands shaking.
We have to find another way. I won't keep taking pieces of her to fuel myself.
Mercy looks away, uncomfortable as always when any of them shows affection for one another. Thankfully, Cassiopeia and Nigella are nowhere near as embarrassing and bold as Cyrus and Valency, but still, their affection for each other is painfully obvious. Too familiar.
We'll figure it out, Mercy says, more confident than she feels. John and Alecto did.
He says it was an accident, Cassiopeia reminds her. He doesn't know how he did it.
But he did, Mercy says. So can we.
Cassiopeia slips her hand into Mercy's.
Horrible. She wants to tug it away.
But Nigella's breathing is still shaky, and Cassiopeia is the least offensive of all of them to spend time with. Mercy allows it.
So can we, Cassiopeia repeats, like a promise, like a warning.
Christabel is beneath her, whimpering and clawing at the sheets, at Mercy, and Mercy adds a third finger, thumbing her clit. Mercy Morin doesn't ever go easy on her, that's not their dynamic, and Christabel isn't gentle with Mercy in bed either, not often anyway. Right now, Mercy is demanding. With her fingers and her mouth, she pulls the orgasm out of Christabel, with the same exacting focus that she gives pretty much everything else in her life. When Christabel blinks and tries to catch her breath, Mercy Morin lowers herself down and pulls Christabel's clit into her mouth and sucks hard. She's not done.
Wait, fuck, Mercy, wait!
Christabel begs, trying to push her mouth away. Mercy ignores her.
I'm... fuck!
Christabel whines. Mercy turns her head to the side and bites hard at the inside of Christabel's thigh. She bucks and yelps, high-pitched. That one is going to leave a mark, and Mercy's grinning when she pulls Christabel's clit back into her mouth only a moment later. She gives Christabel a minute to collect herself after the second orgasm, but she does not stop touching her. Mercy's fingers run up and down Christabel's arms, her stomach, and it's all so glorious. Mercy isn't done. That stupid theorem and Christabel's fanatic devotion to John, to the Empire, might fuck everything all the way up, and Mercy will be damned if she doesn't get a chance to make Christabel feel everything first. Make sure she knows exactly what she would be giving up. Mercy Morn sits back slightly and feels her magic pulse inside of her. Not done quite yet, Chris. She grins, a feral edge to it, she's sure. Christabel lifts her head and notices exactly the flesh magic that Mercy's in the middle of working up, and her eyes widen considerably. You've learned a new trick. Mercy Morn's grin widens. She breathes out slowly, her soul-siphoning magic drawing out of Christabel as her clit swells and grows. Underneath her, Christabel sucks in a harsh breath, going slightly pliant the way she always does with soul-siphoning, even when it's just a little like this, barely a pinch. It's just that Mercy doesn't feel sated after her own two orgasms. She doesn't want this moment to end. She doesn't need her necromancy to get herself hard. Christabel's eyes, locked in on her, her chest heaving in anticipation, are doing that all on their own. Mercy bends down and grabs at Christabel's thighs, digging her nails in as much as she can with how short they are. Turn over, she orders, kissing and biting near her ear. And face the mirror. Fuck! Christabel breathes out harshly and moves as instructed, still boneless and a little sluggish. Usually, things go the other way around between them. Christabel is often the one in control whenever they do this. Mercy still has trouble admitting that she wants it sometimes, even after all these years. Everyone knows about Cassiopeia and Nigella, but not many know about them. Alecto, probably. Cassie for sure, though she's never said anything. Not to Mercy, anyway. But now with what they've found, with how Christabel's eyes lit up, that zealous gleam in her eye, Mercy needs to be in control. She needs to not think about theorems, or ascension, or anything other than the feeling of Christabel's body against her own. Christabel is bigger than her, stronger. She's the one who can lift and maneuver Mercy with relative ease, though nowhere near to the degree of valency, Alfred or Pyrrha. Even Nigella is larger and stronger. It's something of an annoyance to Christabel that she is physically the weakest cavalier, despite being the one most single-minded about it. It's moments like this when Mercy likes it, likes that she can sit and tuck Christabel onto her lap comfortably. Her hands come down to balance herself on Mercy's thighs, and she gasps as Mercy pushes into her without warning, reaching up to force her face towards the mirror, watching Mercy thrust in and out of her. Christabel whines and stops trying to match Mercy's thrusts after only a minute or so, gasping as she, unmercifully, rolls her hips up, pulling Christabel back down again and again and again to meet them. Christabel bucks forward, unbalanced and moaning, and Mercy bites at her shoulder. "Don't take your eyes off the mirror," she scolds.
Mercy!
No, Mercy says. Watch. Gasping, Christabel lifts her head back up towards it. Mercy rewards her by stroking her clit.
Mercy!
Christabel whimpers. Are you asking for it or just calling out my name? Mercy teases. Despite herself, Christabel laughs. Almost a giggle, and it does something horribly fond to Mercy's gut. She pushes Christabel forward and down onto her hands and knees to try and rid herself of the emotion. It doesn't work. Christabel keeps watching them in the mirror, gaze locked with Mercy's, and when they come, it's together. Both of them sagging forward, Mercy splayed out on top of Christabel, still inside of her, as they both catch their breath.
I love you,
Christabel whispers into the floor.
You know that, right?
If you did, then you would let the eightfold word idea go. Mercy counters.
No, Christabel says, gentle. I'm proving it with that.
No, you're not, Mercy snaps, and pulls out with no ease, shoving herself up off the floor and walking towards the shower. It's many minutes later when Christabel climbs inside the shower with her, wrapping herself around Mercy from behind.
Yes, I am, she whispers into Mercy's back.
I'm not doing it, Mercy says, firmly. I won't. Christabel starts washing her hair, clearly trying to coax it out of her, but Mercy will not budge on this. She will do many things for John, for the Empire, for their future, but she will not do this. Not Christabel. Not for anything. John, the houses, the Empire, they can all fuck off and die for all that she cares. She will not lose Christabel for him. I will not change my mind, Chris, Mercy says, softer now. She needs Christabel to accept this. The hands in her hair go still as Christabel realizes that Mercy is serious. Mercy, snappish and temperamental and cruel, is wont to change her mind about anything if she feels like it. Mercy, soft and quiet and gentle, is a Mercy who will not budge, and Christabel knows this better than any of the rest of them.
All right, Christabel says, finally. It sounds like a warning.
They figure out the soul siphoning first. Each house has split off and begun their own signatures, magic specific to them and their houses, something more distinct. But they all know what it is underneath the surface, simply their own attempts to figure out John and Electo's bond. John isn't particularly helpful. To his credit, he is busy resurrecting people left and right, in between fighting the insurgents who try to kill him back in their old home. The one that only he remembers. Mercy is spending all of her time cooped up down in the lab, Cassiopeia beside her, while Christabel and Nigella spar or conspire or attempt to cook in the other room. Half the time, Cassiopeia sighs and walks out, nudging Nigella out of the way with a hip check and cooking for them all while hollering instructions and comments over her shoulder back to the rest of them. Pyrrha joins them occasionally, far more intelligent than Gideon could ever hope to be, and she hovers over Mercy's shoulder, pointing at something, when they all hear Christabel gasp in soft surprise.
What?
Mercy asks, searching the room for threats, though there never are any, down here. Kanan House is their one safe place in all the Empire, warded off to even the gods.
Oh,
Christabel hums, shuffling around the papers in front of her.
I thought...
She bites at her lip, unsure, tentative, and then looks up and meets Mercy's eye.
Never mind,
she says, attempting a reassuring smile that Mercy doesn't believe for even a moment. Even Nigella's eyes narrow at Christabel a minute or two longer. Christabel quickly pushes herself up away from the table, taking a few of the pages with her, nonchalant.
Honestly, she laughs at herself, it's nothing. I read it wrong.
Let me see, Mercy starts, a hand reaching out for the papers, but Christabel is already shaking her head and halfway out the door.
I'm going to go and check in on Valency's wound, then see if John needs any help. I'll see you later,
she calls over her shoulder, and then she's gone.
Well, that was odd,
Pyrrha says in her dry, blunt way.
Indeed,
Cassiopeia says, looking over at Mercy curious. Mercy ignores them all and ducks her head back down to her work. Whatever it was, she'll get it out of Christabel later. Except that later never comes. Electo has a fit, one of many, lately, and those damned beasts come screeching at their doors, and it's quite the distraction, all things considered. When Mercy finally slumps into bed almost a full 24 hours later, she's boneless and exhausted, and completely forgets to ask. She forgets the next morning, too, and the next after that. There are new people. John hasn't made any new people in decades, so these are their people, descendants of their houses, and three of the six of them are necromancers. Mercy Morn looks over at the girl sitting in the wheelchair, smiling beatifically up at them all, and watches Christabel soften to her immediately. Mercy scowls and turns her irritation over towards John.
New people never come to Canaan House. It's theirs. The Empire and the houses are separate from them. They visit, of course, though less and less as the decades roll along and they grow to be self-sustaining. John visits them all a bit more often, searching around for this very thing. He is beaming, giddy. He hadn't been sure necromancy would become genetic, but the evidence is slowly building and building. These three must be exceptionally powerful for John to bother bringing them home. Though, looking at the frail woman, Mercy is skeptical. The one called Anastasia barely looks to be out of her teens. Alecto looks intrigued by her, though, and Alecto hardly looks intrigued by anything. And that is enough to spark Mercy's curiosity. It takes precedent, and she forgets all about Christabel's face in the lab. Not until it's much too late.
"Can you do it to me?"
Christabel asks, panting around Mercy's nipple as she ties her wrists together. She's always been a fantastic multitasker.
"Do what?"
Mercy breathes, hissing as Christabel bites her.
"I want to be inside you,"
Christabel demands.
"So be inside me,"
Mercy says, annoyed at the desperate, pleading tone in her voice.
"No,"
Christabel teases, pushing two fingers inside and pulling them out just as quickly.
"Not like that."
She's grinning, mischievous and brilliant, and Mercy's brain finally catches up. Christabel bites her again, this time on the top of her shoulder. That's going to leave a mark. Mercy clucks her tongue in irritation at her.
"I'll give you more,"
Christabel warns. "So many you won't be able to hide behind makeup and clothes."
"I have necromancy," Mercy scoffs. "I can make them go away."
"Perhaps," Christabel concedes.
"But I'll just keep making more."
True to her word, she bites down hard on Mercy's bicep and she gasps, hissing in pain.
"Make me one," she demands again, "and I'll stop."
Mercy glares at her. She's not sure that she wants Christabel to stop, but she wants to feel Christabel inside of her more than she wants Christabel's teeth on her. So she relents. The minute that Christabel feels the soul siphoning, feels her clit expanding, she hisses out in excitement and flips Mercy over, beginning to tie her ankles together too. Mercy is embarrassingly wet by the time Christabel has her lying down on her left side. Christabel lifts one of Mercy's legs up a bit, straining against the bonds, and Mercy moans as she feels Christabel's cock stroke back and forth against her folds from behind her.
"What do you want?"
Christabel whispers, biting her ear.
"Fuck you,"
Mercy rasps.
"What do you want?"
Christabel repeats, teasing her clit with each word. Mercy clamps her mouth shut, trying to bite back her moans. She's unsuccessful. She gasps in surprise as Christabel slips a wet finger inside Mercy's ass.
"Tell me," she demands.
Her tone slips away from playful and dominating to something softer, horribly affectionate.
"Tell me, Mercy, and I'll give it to you."
She rolls her hips, pushing her finger deeper inside, her cock moving back and forth between Mercy's legs, and it's all too much, and not nearly enough, and Mercy loves her. She loves her. She hates it, so much, but she's known for years. She never says it, not like that, not out loud, not simply, not the way Christabel has before. But it's true, and they both know it.
"I want..."
Mercy swallows, throat thick with everything she doesn't want to say.
"I want you to fuck me,"
she says instead. Christabel stiffens for a moment, and Mercy knows that she's disappointed. Mercy is disappointed in herself, so... Christabel pulls her finger out and wrenches Mercy's leg up against the bonds without an ounce of gentleness, pushing her cock inside.
"Your wish,"
she pants, thrusting as she snakes an arm around Mercy's neck from behind, tugging her face towards Christabel's.
"My pleasure."
She forces Mercy to look her in the eye, and Mercy tries to close her eyes because it's all too much. It's always too much. Christabel slaps her breast, and Mercy gasps, eyes blinking open.
Look at me, Christabel demands. I, Chris, please don't.
No, Christabel says, hard.
Look at me. You can give me at least that, Mercy Morn.
Mercy closes her eyes. She doesn't know if she can, actually.
Mercy!
I love you, Mercy gasps, eyes shut tight.
I do.
Christabel's whole body goes still, and Mercy moans unconsciously at the loss of friction.
Mercy Morn,
Christabel whispers, soft and gentle.
Look at me.
I gave you what you wanted, Mercy says, like a brat. Christabel chuckles, nuzzling her face into the crook of Mercy's neck.
You didn't, actually, she says. I never asked you for that.
I know. I've always known.
I want you to look at me.
She never does, is the thing. She's made Christabel watch in the mirror before. But even when they are facing each other, which isn't as often for this exact reason, Mercy doesn't. She occupies herself with Christabel's breasts, skin, everything but her face, whenever possible. Not when they're like this. It's too much.
Chris.
She pulls out of Mercy, and the warmth from behind her back disappears entirely. Mercy cries out in disappointment, maybe even a little in fear, because Christabel doesn't push. It has been nearly 2.5 centuries of not pushing, and this might be her limit.
Wait!
Mercy scrambles, straining against the bonds, desperate to twist herself around and look at Christabel now. She's grabbed, and the bonds are ripped apart.
Christabel!
She's tied to the bedpost instead, ankles and wrists. And then Christabel is dreadling her.
I'm sorry, Mercy says. I know I'm a gremlin. I'm sorry.
Christabel pushes herself back inside, and Mercy gasps in relief. Then she shivers as Christabel leans down both hands on the sides of Mercy's face, noses nearly pressed against each other.
Look at me,
she demands with each thrust. Mercy wants to close her eyes.
It's too much. It's always too fucking much.
But she won't give Christabel the eightfold word. She won't. But she can give her this. Mercy opens her eyes and locks in on Christabel's.
I love you,
she whispers, and holds her gaze steady. Christabel cries, and Mercy's horrified to find out that she is too. Christabel is gentle in a way that they never are with each other in bed, and Mercy hates it and loves it in equal measure. When she finally moves a hand down to Mercy's clit, she bucks against the bonds, desperate to hold Christabel's gaze through her orgasm. She's shaking by the time Christabel unties her and holds her tight, crying almost uncontrollably.
Thank you,
Christabel whispers after a few moments.
I promise, next time, I'll bend you over and fuck you within an inch of your life.
Mercy laughs and weakly reaches back and slaps her. Or I will, she counters. Christabel chuckles and kisses her, and it's perfect. Maybe Mercy can do this. Trust this. Maybe everything will work out just the way she wants it. The day that Christabel convinces Alfred, Mercy's eye contact never wavers.
My love, we will be wonderful together, I promise.
Augustine moves before she does, rushing towards Alfred without hesitancy, now that he has no other choice. The knife slides into place, and the noise that comes out of Mercy is unspeakable, awful, haunts her dreams for millennia after. The sound of clay shattering mixes together with Mercy's screams, Augustine's, Alfred's, Valency's, and Cassiopeia's, and Nigella's, as they come running to help. Mercy Morn's entire body, every nerve, hurts as she takes Christabel's soul inside of her own, writhing on the ground beside her newly empty shell of a body. John's arms dare to try and touch her first. She shoves him, harder than she's ever shoved another, hard enough that she catches him by surprise, hard enough that he slams into the wall, head cracking and breath leaving him in a rasp. Mercy Morn the first, the saint of joy. Second, Augustine moved first, moved faster. Saint,
to serve the king undying, vomits onto the floor and cries in front of them all, refusing to be parted from Christabel's body. Cassiopeia and Valency silently clean up around her. Mercy watches Valency scoop up her shattered yellow sunflower mug and vomit, and she closes her eyes, pressing her forehead into Christabel's chest. The color yellow still makes her queasy millennia later. The end.